Hi, I'm Luke.
And I'm Brenna.
We are the Farm Finders. When we first got married, we dreamed of owning land and building a self-sufficient lifestyle.
But we soon saw that buying land was almost out of reach. Land was expensive and hard to finance. But we couldn't just give up on our dream of being landowners.
To be honest, it was a pretty discouraging problem. But we were determined to find a solution, so we started a company called the Farm Finders to find properties that anyone could afford.
That was a few years back, and today we're proud to say we've helped hundreds of people make their landowning dreams a reality.
There's something inside each of us that wants a piece of land to call our own. Here at the Farm Finders, we can make that happen.
If you're like us and dream of owning land, then check out our website at thefarmfinders.com to find that perfect property.
Take advantage of our no-credit check, zero-interest owner financing with payments as low as $50 a month with our secure online checkout. It's easy to make any property yours with just a few clicks.
So don't just dream. Do something. Visit thefarmfinders.com today.
Let's make you a landowner.
Now you can hear us around the world, streaming 24/7 at safetyfm.com.
Streaming live from Taos, New Mexico.
Here is Dr. J. Allen on Safety FM.
Broadcasting live from the Safety FM studios in Orlando, Florida. Here is your host, Dr. J. Allen on Safety FM.
This episode of the broadcast and the podcast is brought to you by Safety Focus Moments. They're consultants that want to help you get the safety culture you've been looking for. For more information, go to safetyfocusmoment.com.
Hello and welcome to Safety FM. This is Jay Allen. Well, it does appear that a lot of you are enjoying this mini-series that we have been doing over the last few weeks. If you haven't had a chance, please take a moment and take a listen to the pre-accident investigation with Dr. Todd Conklin, also known as the Toddcast. On his latest episode, he had Tony Machera, Rob Fisher, Shane Butch, and of course himself, talking about the early days of human performance. I'm going to say this is kind of an add-on to this particular mini-series. If you take a listen, it gives you some other context to the story. So I'm not going to take too much time before we get this started, but at the end of the episode, come on back over. We'll take a listen, do a small recap, and move forward from there. Enjoy it now, here on Safety FM.
It begins in Orlando, Florida, and travels steadily to the west, beaming across North America and planet Earth.
And into your head.
The world of safety never stops. And now, the Safety FM podcast and broadcast with Dr. J. Allen.
Todd Conklin.
When it came out, everybody acted like they read it, but you could totally tell who hadn't read it. And so when you find people that hadn't read it, you'd kind of bust their chops and make them read it. And then they'd come back and say, God, this is a really, it was a, that I think is, I mean, I can say this, I think, without making Sydney too angry at me. That book was really powerful. It was his first one, and that really colored a lot of the DOE handbook. Not so much the tool, not volume two, the tools, but certainly volume one, the one that Lamar put together with everybody's help on sort of the foundations, the concepts. That book was, I can't underestimate how important that first book was.
Shane Bush.
Okay. Well, and then I guess let me ask kind of just some backstory questions, if you don't mind, because as I've gone down this path, really doing a lot of research into the different people that have been involved with this, there's a name that comes up, and it doesn't come up often, but it does come up from time to time. Who exactly is Lamar Palmer?
Oh, man, Lamar Palmer. I'll be honest with you, of all the unsung heroes in the human performance world is Lamar Palmer. That man, if it wasn't for him, neither Todd or I or a lot of other people would have not had the success. So his role, what happened is when Earl Carnes and I and Todd were running around the country teaching classes and DOE really started buying into this, they decided, well, let's produce some DOE manuals so we don't have to keep referencing commercial nuclear power plants. And by the way, some people are turned off as soon as you say commercial nuclear power plants because, like, oh, man, triple redundancy, you're going to pack on the defenses, you're going to... And so I'm careful in how I use it. I use it, but I'm careful in the audience. So DOE wanted to have DOE spin. So what they did is they took all of INPO's material and basically gave it a DOE twist. Rather than events, they'd call them occurrences, rather than, again, talking about the nuclear power plant statistics, they talked about DOE statistics. But Lamar Palmer was the author of both the DOE book 1 and 2, and very few people know that. In fact, I just ran into him up. He's retired in the Tri-Cities right now. And I mentioned to him that I have handed, I call it his manual, because that's just a term of endearment for me, because this man had so much to do with my career and my success. But I tell him, Lamar, unbeknownst to you, this manual is in 17 countries I've been in. And I know Todd references it quite a bit, but he was, and I've done work in 44 of the 50 states, many of them numerous times. And I always hand it out. I'm getting ready to go to Louisiana next week. I'll hand out the DOE manual. I do my Vegas classes. I hand out the DOE manual. And it was so cool because the man almost got a tear in his eye. And he says, you know, all these years I've wondered, did I really make a difference? Did I really make a difference? And it was so sad to me because I assumed he knew. But he put his heart and soul into that manual, and his name doesn't appear anywhere. But in my opinion, I put him next to Earl Carnes at the top of the list as to why we've, as a community of practice, had such success.
Lamar Palmer.
So how close is this to the original documents that you were working on? I mean, I would imagine there's some editing that probably had to go into place, but how close is it to the original, I guess, we'll say the original outline that was built off of? How close is it?
I think it's pretty close. I think it's pretty close. There were lots of little, change this, change that, word, and sentence structure changes and things like that. But basically the building blocks and the elements within those building blocks are pretty much the way that was written.
So at this particular time, with a lot of the information coming from INPO, is Tony Machera the one that's doing the work from the INPO side and you're interacting with him?
No, I don't remember any interface with INPO after I got their materials. We had their materials. We had their handbooks, and we used those as our takeoff.
Now, I guess looking forward now, or looking to our current standpoint, I guess, do you find it interesting on how people have actually taken those documents and now are addressing this more along the lines of a new version of safety, or safety 2.0, as some people refer to it? Are you impressed that they're still kind of, these documents are still standing the test of time?
Yes, I think that speaks well for the standard itself. And, like all DOE materials that are written by contractors, nobody gets to put their name on them. They're all ghostwritten, and that's the way this was. This is ghostwritten. I was the ghostwriter. But DOE documents, handbooks, procedures, high-level documents, they'll have a DOE print on them, but the people who actually write them, if they're contractors, you never see that. You never see their name in print.
I find it so interesting on how it works, because you're ghostwriting this material that essentially is going to change not just that industry, it's going to change several industries, and we're talking years later, and they're still having an impact on what people are doing out in the field.
Yes, and I think that speaks well for DOE. You know, one thing about the Department of Energy, when they take on a project that they believe in, which they did believe in this project, and several of the facilities, including the one where Shane Bush is from, the Idaho National Laboratory, his top management put a lot of money and effort and time in ensuring that literally all the people at the Idaho lab received instruction on human performance improvement. And there were other locales where that was the case. Now, the fact that other entities are using these materials or making use of them plays well for the Department of Energy, I think. And that's as it should be.
Well, if you had to look back right now and say how much time you invested doing these documents, what are you guesstimating?
I would say my own personal time. Probably the writing, the rewrites, the edits that took place, and, you know, the way the review system works in DOE is you are required to respond to every comment made by a commenter. They do not say, okay, we're going to take comments from 20 people. Anybody who has access to the materials and wants to read them and report on them, the initial writer is required to respond to every comment they make. Now, you don't have to accept every comment, but you have to respond to every comment. So the review process took a long time. I spent probably 25% of my total time in the review process.
Well, and we're talking about two very large manuals here, where, I mean, we're not talking about very small items. So this is, I mean, wow, that's amazing. 25% of your time doing that.
That's what I'm saying. I spent 2 years, and it was nearly full time, I would say. At least 1 year was full time, and the other year was maybe half time. Probably 3,000 hours.
Well, it's interesting just hearing that, because that's a lot of time to be invested into this, but just realizing what kind of impact it's going to have later down the road. I mean, of course, it has an impact the moment that they're yet released, but also the impact that they're still having currently. And the amazing part is that we're talking like 25 years, and a lot of people still look at it and go, hey, this is the new version of safety. And it's like, new version of safety. It's amazing that there was a group of people that got together and were able to come up with concepts that are still being looked at as a new view and refreshing. And the interesting part about it is that when I talk to different people, they say that only about 10% of organizations are currently using this. So there's still such a large market available that this can actually tie into. And it's just, I look at it and I go, how did you have so much knowledge in regards of being able to form this to make sense to be used in other items?
Yeah, I was just talking with the man that I worked for 14 years. His name is Mike Shaner. Maybe you've heard his name. Mike Shaner is the owner of MAS Consultants. And he told me the other day that he's trained over 1,000 people on human performance improvement. He's been doing it for years as well. You know, the interesting thing is that it has application, Jay, as I'm sure you're well aware. It has application not just for the man who's pushing buttons in the control room or the maintainer who's repacking a pump, but it has application all across the spectrum for people who do hands-on work and for people who do not only field work but office work. People who write procedures, managers who oversee operations. I mean, it just, that the thing that's interesting about human performance improvement is that human error accounts for about 80% of all accidents. But within the concept of error itself, the individual is only responsible for about 30%, and 70% is the organization.
Earl Carnes.
ENPO, its job was to connect the nuclear power industry in the United States through communication flows, joint standardization, training, leadership development, lessons learned systems, operating experience sharing, that kind of stuff, to drive through communication and collaborative improvement efforts. Over here, you don't even know what your neighbor's doing. Well, it was not the same thing as ENPO or the commercial nuclear power industry, but it was in a way, it's still going on today, but it was to establish those social linkages to reach outside to the rest of the world. You know, ENPO reached out to FAA as an example, okay? You know, to see what they were doing. Well, they started reaching out begrudgingly, you know, and looking at knowledge in other areas, particularly in the commercial nuclear power industry and ENPO. So that's the kind of thing that Admiral Watkins and his people started, and that I had the pleasure to be engaged with. And so the first major thing then that happened was called integrated safety management. Safety was a huge thing. But that what they did was that they had a whole bunch of DOE orders that had been hanging around for a long time, but people developed their own ways of working out there. And so as long as it was doing okay, you weren't having big problems, then I'm not going to mess with you. But so a new crew comes to the town, they've got all these orders sitting there, and you go, well, I guess we better go find out people complying with them, hadn't we? So they go out, and guess what? No, they weren't. They had their own stuff. Okay, they developed it. Well, so you've got headquarters. Somebody says, you're supposed to be inspecting these people. Well, they go out, they get their checklist, they inspect them. And guess what? There was a schism. Okay? You people, obviously, because I'm from Washington, I've got a checklist. I don't mean to be pejorative, but it's basically kind of what went on. And you don't meet my checklist, and therefore, you must be dumb. Well, they were brilliant. Okay? You can... These were the people that developed nuclear science and technology, okay? I mean, they were, okay? But did they keep up with commercial standards? No, you know? I mean, you got to look at the budget, okay? So if they're, you know, if you got finished with something over here and it would take a whole lot of money to clean it up, you just shut it down, closed it up, walked away, go build another one, okay? Why not? Because they did what they were getting paid for. You know, the guys who were in the plant keeping the systems running, same story. They always delivered what they were asked to do for national security, for, you know, incredible research and development. I mean, it's just, they always delivered. That's who they are. They did difficult, impossible jobs that nobody else could do.
Todd Conklin.
Now, do you feel that was like an assisted guide to the DOE and ENPO stuff at the time then? Is that how you're looking at this?
I think it would be more foundational. I think what it did was change the way that and Jim Reason's books as well, but that changed the way that Shane and I, and to a great extent, Earl and there was a cast of characters there that did that. It changed the way we taught the class, which then in turn changed the way the handbook was written, which that's when it starts to move a little bit away from the ENPO book. Remember, the ENPO book was written pretty early, and it was a philosophical as well, very well done. Tony did an amazing job, but it was written kind of under the old view, which was the idea that you would manage human error. And the Decker book helped us understand that whole idea of managing error is really seductive, but it's not very practical. And that's when we started really looking more, even more so, at kind of a systems approach.
So do you feel that he was using the ENPO information to be kind of some of the foundational stuff moving forward for what he was doing research-wise for his book?
Who's he? Decker?
Decker. Yeah, sorry about that.
No, I don't think so. I'm going to have to ask him that question. But my guess is he probably did not have access to the ENPO book, because at the time ENPO was really, really, really tight with who got their book. You had to be a member of the ENPO, and you had to be a dues paying member of ENPO to have access to their material. And so I would imagine he did not have access to that book. I would actually tell you, if it's a chicken and egg conversation, it probably started with Reason stuff then some of Decker's stuff, then the Impo Handbook, then Decker's book would have come out. They would have been written kind of in parallel. And then Decker's book and all that stuff kind of leads to the DOE handbook, which we knew we were going to write, and we knew it was going to be available publicly. I mean, everybody knew that. But nobody, I mean, Jay, nobody imagined in a million billion years that anyone would ever read the DOE handbook.
Especially as popular as they are now.
In a million billion years. I mean, I kind of thought we were putting together a handbook just for us. I knew it would be available. I mean, that's fine because it's taxpayer money. So I didn't have any problem with that. But I never imagined any other industry or any other organization would ever look at it. I mean, you just don't think about that. But that's kind of what's been interesting about this journey is that it's been really a journey of self-discovery or self-discovery is accurate, but I would say it's been a journey of each organization discovering about itself. And we never thought about this having legs outside of our own companies, our own organizations. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what Shane said, but I bet you Shane said the same thing. It just, you never ever thought anybody other than our little laboratories would care about this stuff.
Shane Bush.
No, that's all right. Honestly, it was people helping people. In fact, it was so interesting because if you find something that you really are passionate about, and it's interesting, and I'm not sure what the conversations were like with the people you mentioned at the beginning of this, but just about every person I know that's been successful with human performance is because they have a passion for it. And that comes across real quickly. I mean, if you're trying to teach something you don't believe in, you're going to be found out very quickly. And so the reward wasn't in the compensation for teaching the class. And I know this sounds warm and fuzzy and all that, but it's true. The reward comes watching people's mindset change, watching them look at things differently, sending me emails 2 weeks later saying, holy mackerel, I just never looked at the way. In fact, you've changed the way we look at everything at work now. And the just culture has changed the environment. And people are more willing to talk in the work environment. So now, don't get me wrong. I don't do this for free. I am compensated, but I have to tell you that after a while, if you truly don't believe in your product, you're going to have a crisis of conscience because you're out there trying to sell something that you don't believe in. It will never work. So we did. We handed it to everybody else, and that kind of started us off with this whole sharing thing. When I left the INL for that 3-year leave, one of the coolest things that happened to me is I wasn't in the union at the time. I was in the union years ago, but they showed up my doorstep after I'd given my notice and walked away and everything and gave me a gold watch. This is from the union. And on the back of it, it said engraved friends of the worker. And I thought, dang, how, and my dad was a blue collar worker his whole life. Now my dad died when I was really young, but I have to admit every time I go to these plants and these big things and I always think of my dad, but what better compliment can you get than that? Friends of the worker, really? Trying to help them and at the same time getting the same compliments from senior managers. It's a win-win. It's just a win-win.
So I'm going to interrupt the actual interview here for a moment. Now, I have to tell you, when I first started off doing this mini-series, it was pretty interesting because I kept on wondering why we were doing things, and I'm talking about as practitioners and for people that are actually going out there and consulting, on why we were actually still not giving away the information for free. And the original founding fathers, as you hear some of the messaging as we go through, they reference that it was public domain and things along those that extent. Now, what I found interesting is as I'm doing this and not knowing ahead of time that this is going to occur, so I find it interesting, Todd Conklin's consortium releases something called thehophub.org. So the conversation, or really the news story, takes a minor twist here. Because my big complaint behind the news story, and if I have to say it's a complaint, is that we're not giving away the information for free. And here's where the twist starts. And we'll start off here with Shane Bush. Now, Shane, do you believe that we're going down the correct path currently with on how some of these things are working? I mean, I know that earlier this week, there was a group of people that got together and they put out a website called hophub.org, and it's a consortium of information and they've released it now to the general public. Is this the way that it should have been all along? Is that how your general feeling? Because they're giving it away?
You know, I haven't even looked in that in detail because I'm so busy with my own stuff. But I am one voice. And if it's an opinion, let's make sure that people understand this is an opinion, not, you know,
but don't undersell yourself. You are a very important voice inside of this. I mean, I know that we can say it's one voice, but it's one voice that has a lot of influence on where this has been and where it's going. So I love you being humble, but let's be realistic too.
Well, and I appreciate that. But honestly, here's what I see happening is I consider myself and I'm 50. How old am I? 57 or 58. That's an error. But I'm going to be leaving soon. And if we don't make sure that this process is brought up to speed for the millennials and the X's and the Y's, whether it's electronic, whether it's on a server, whether it's an app, then it's going to die. So all power to them. If they can take this and by modifying it and by putting out a website and keeping the interest via technology, because if you don't update, you're going to, again, date yourself as far as influencing. And honestly, I it's crazy because I each class now I'm asking when I use examples or references, I'm asking people, anybody remember Paul Harvey? Or anybody remember? And I'm getting about half the class now not raising their hand. And so I have a big decision to make. Do I take a lot of time and update all my stuff to the current, or do I just bow out like Johnny Carson did and leave on top? And I think it's going to be
I think you can leave on top, but I don't think it's time yet. I don't think you're close on time on leaving. I think you have several more years in you, but that's of course your choice.
Well, and what I've done so that I could keep that choice is hired my daughter and hired my nephew, and we're putting out now the electronic version of the worksheet. And I'm not sure if I gave that to you when you took it, but we're taking that to another level now to where it automatically does the syncing with the corrective actions without you even knowing it by the causal codes you pick and stuff. So I'm trying to make sure to stay up at least to the point where I can stay credible in the eyes of the customer. And so far the feedback has been, yes, that I am. Now, again, at the appropriate time, I'd love to hand this off to the next generation and have them take it. And as long as they can stick to the philosophy, and that's the critical thing, as long as you can stick to that original philosophy of what this is about, then I think there's numerous ways that this can be presented. Be very, very effective.
Todd Conklin.
Well, right now, it seems like you're trying to go back to origin to some extent. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a really good way in regards to...
Let's not call it origin. Let's call it back to first principles.
Okay, so let's say first principles. So this week, you and your core group have released something called Hop... What is it? Oh, my God. I'm going to mess this up real quick. Hophub.org. And you're giving all of your information away. I was talking about PDF slides. Yeah, you imagine it. All the resources are there. Yeah, now, that hasn't been something that we've seen a lot. I mean, we'll say that people give their stuff away, but you guys have decided to centralize one location, one stop shop. You go there and everything's there. What was the decision behind that?
Because why wouldn't you?
Well, a lot of people are trying to, we'll say, quote unquote, market their own versionality of this.
Yeah.
But you all of a sudden said, no, we're taking what we've been doing in books, what we've been doing in presentations, what we've been teaching throughout the years, because that's really what it is. And you said, consortium, here, take it.
Yeah. Well, because the ideas, arguing and forming and thinking about the ideas is way, way more fun than writing the product. The product is just a result of the thinking. Nobody's had their own new ideas. Everybody's idea are a twist on somebody else's idea. And so we don't own those ideas. So if we don't own those ideas, how can we sell? How can we monetize them? Why wouldn't you just give them away? I mean, because they're just ideas. I mean, and my hope is that if we give them away, then other people will take them and they'll do great things with them and they'll give them away again. And I bet that's what happens. I mean, that's always what happens with good change. Is good change isn't something that you own. Good change is something that you give away, right? And the great thing about giving everything away is that you've given it away. I mean, you don't have to worry about intellectual property or lawyers or who's, you know, who owns this slide or who owns that slide. Who cares? It's the ideas that matter. And so giving the ideas away makes us stronger, and it makes us more interesting, and it makes us more attractive.
Well, so, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but you have to understand there's also some people out there that have taken some of this information and they have marketed it as it's their own thing. There's even organizations that are out there, and I'm just going to reference this real quick. And I had told you this briefly in the past in a side conversation, that there's people that have taken your stuff and put it behind a paywall where you have to pay to get there to get your information.
That must be horribly disappointing when you pay and you're like, oh crap, it's just this.
Right. And I don't think you have anything to do with it on how it was set up, but I just find it interesting that I'm not going to say that you're affecting other people's businesses, but other people have decided to go down that route where they're selling it and you're giving it away for free. And I understand that you want to change the industry and have that impact for people to use that information and change things. Now, as you're giving this away for free, and you know that these things are going to change because there's going to be other independent thinkers that come that same direction and they start looking at it, what do you see that the outcome might end up being overall?
I don't know. I mean, I think everyone can do what they want to do, right? If you want to start a business and sell it, that's fine. If you can sell it, that's great. I mean, I support it. I want everyone to be successful. But at least for me, and really for the guys in the little hop up thing that we put together, and that's just, I mean, we just kind of came together as friends and put that together. We just decided the best way to handle it is just give it away for free. I don't know. It's funny. It's not that big a deal to us.
Well, you see, it's funny because you have to understand that there's other consultants that are out there that look at it and go, the person that's really top tier, because the four of you guys are very well known within this industry, and you gave away your stuff for free, which is unheard of. It's almost like listening to when Bill Gates gave away his money. It almost has that same kind of impact on how other people are looking at it.
I would say it's actually incredibly different than that.
you know what I mean, because you're giving away your intellectual property.
Jay, the thing I would come back to you and tell you is that we never owned it to start with. And so it's not like we're giving stuff away. Like we said, okay, here we go, it's all free. It was never ours to start with. And so we're just sort of passing it on. You know, here's what we're thinking about, and see what you think about. And the great thing is that, you know, it'll change again. I mean, all that stuff that's up there is probably not, I promise you, it's not the latest version of my fundamentals class, because I had to redeck my fundamentals class to meet the new five principles, because too many people are saying, well, why'd you write a book about five principles and they're not in your class? So they're not in my class.
Don't worry, we're not done yet. There's more to the story. So I'm done interviewing Dr. Todd Conklin, and he turns around and he tells me the person really behind the Hop Hub out of his consortium group was Andrea Baker. Now, Andrea Baker has been on the show before, and I love the way that she teaches. I love the way that she speaks. She just says it in a method that you feel like you're right there, and the way that she's telling you the information, it's applicable. So I decided to go ahead and start hunting down Andrea Baker. And here's what she had to say about her involvement with hophub.org. So in talking, I figured out that Todd said you were the mastermind behind the whole thing. So I was
I don't think that's true. Todd gives credit where credit isn't due. It was definitely a joint decision, and you know, between Todd, myself, Bob, and Mark, to make sure that anything that we had was accessible. Which, what was a little bit surprising, I think, to us is that the information we had was accessible before. It just wasn't easily accessible. So we would give it out to people all the time. But folks didn't know that it was available because it was, you know, harder to get to because they'd have to ask for it. So, right now, as we speak,
you have it more as a consortium, and it looks like everything that's kind of like the main files that you would normally find are actually there. So when you decided to do it, what was the thought process?
Well, I have to give that thought process, like the genesis of it, I would definitely give credit to Todd, because when myself and Bob started learning from Todd originally, One of the things that he taught us really early on, as you know, as he was teaching the corporations that we were part of, is that this thought process isn't something that we would want anyone to own necessarily. From his point of view, it was really something we'd want to be able to freely share. And so he freely shared his slides at the time with us, which is part of the reason why Bob and I were able to learn the information and then pass it on within our own corporation. So when we started doing this on our own, we just kind of followed in those footsteps. And it really is it's hard for me personally to want to take that information away from people, since we know it can save lives. So as free and open as we can be with it, seems like the best course of action.
Well, here's my question to you, because somebody used this analogy and I want to see what you think behind it. You can go to the internet and you can see a website that will have a recipe of your favorite from your favorite restaurant. But you might try to make it at home and it's not the same. So do you feel that even though people might have access to these documentation, it might not be as good as if you or one of you four were actually coming out and helping an organization?
Well, I mean, I think in general it's a difficult concept for people to sort of understand if they weren't already thinking along this vein to begin with. But if I would add to that analogy, imagine that you've taken some cooking courses and you're pretty comfortable around the kitchen, or maybe you just were self-taught and it was something that you like to do already, and then you were able to get a recipe from someone. So I don't think it takes the place of people understanding the concepts, but there's a lot of different ways you can get proficient in something. And I'm not sure that it, you know, is one person in the world or two people or five people in the world or whoever are the masters of the information that you'd be required to learn from, because there's a lot of chefs out there, right? So there's a lot of different people you can learn from. Or it might be something that you've just read a lot of really amazing thought leaders, and it would be helpful for you to have information in order to put it in words that would be easy to pass on to other people.
And then I guess my next question to you would be this. Do you feel that a lot of the information that's out there, people are just repackaging and kind of just changing the name and just using the same concept to something else?
I don't know. I don't know that I have enough. It certainly depends upon what you're looking at, right? So I'm sure that happens. There's a lot of places, but that happens with everything, right? That happens with any commodity in the entire world. You know, folks will, any piece of information, we say that there's no, you know, fresh idea in the entire world. So, I'm sure some of that's happening. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think it's just many different ways of passing on the same information. I think kind of the goal that at least the four of us have, that I'm pretty confident we all feel very strongly about, is that the more people that understand these concepts, the better off we're going to be. How they get that information, is really up to them. And then I'm sure there's many different paths that people could follow to get that information.
And where do you think that we're going to end up going next, going down this path?
In general, around top, or
yeah, around
which
top.
Piece? I mean, so my personal hope would be that we continue to learn from each other as organizations take these concepts and start to think about how do they use them. And there's lots of places that are doing amazing things already. My hope would be that they become so embedded in how we are doing work that at some point this doesn't have a name anymore. At some point, it's just kind of what we do. That would be my hope, is to the direction we're moving in, where we'll have lots of names for it, and then at some point it will have no name, because that's just how people do business.
Welcome back. Normally, most people right now would give you a recap on how this ends and all that, but I don't really think that this is the end of the story. I really do appreciate the time that Shane Bush, Todd Conklin, Earl Carnes, Lamar Palmer, and Andrea Baker put into helping me with this miniseries. We're never going to get all of the information that took place in those beginning days. I would love to sit here and say that we could. And there's more people that were probably involved with this that we'll ever be able to interview or even get a hold of. Now, if you did pay close attention, there was a reference as we went through this path that IMPO had put a lot of this information already together before the Department of Energy started to get involved. And I don't want this story to go without the unsung heroes of Tony Machera and Rob Fisher. Those are names that keep on coming up when we're talking about interacting with the info side. So I want to make sure that they are referenced on here. A lot of the information discussed on this little mini-series has been based on the Department of Energy or the DOE. I'm sure in time I will release these episodes in their full entirety in regards of how the interviews were performed and what was said at the time. Some of them are several hours long, some of them are short. So in time, I'm sure we will release them. What I would ask is that you do the research into the information, understand it clearly. There's so much data that's out there, but make sure that you are following what the original documents were supposed to say and what they, not really what they were supposed to say, what they actually do say. And don't fall into these versionalities that are out there that don't go based on the original information. Things always do change, don't get me wrong here, but I think sometimes we're missing some of the data. I'll tell you, I'm not going to be able to solve people's problems. I don't look at it and go, oh yes, I went to the forefathers and I will be able to solve it. Nope, I look at it and go, I was able to learn things on this miniseries that I would have never been able to learn otherwise. All I can say is thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this miniseries. Hopefully you did enjoy it. I had all kinds of fun attempting to put it together, getting in contact with these people, and being able to spend countless hours in regards of listening to what happened back then when everything was being built. I am grateful for the people that came on. I'm grateful for the audience who have been listening to the last few episodes in regards of what's going on. As always, you can come to us here at Safety FM. Go to safetyfm.com for more information. We're always streaming 24/7 right there. From time to time, we do jump on, do some live events. We also are available on the Google Play app and also the Apple app. In regards, you can download it directly onto your phone and available, as always, on the Alexa skill. For right now, I have been your safety manager and host, Jay Allen, and I'm eternally grateful for you, the listener. Until next time, be safe.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
SafetyFM.com.
Wow, how things can change from one week to the next. Hey, hope everybody out there is staying healthy. I know everything is super crazy. We feel disoriented by the COVID-19 virus. It's more important than ever to stay connected and check in with your loved ones. That's why I'm so happy I've got T-Mobile. Listen, T-Mobile isn't just talking the talk. They're taking measures right now to make life easier for everyone by doing the right thing for their customers during this really critical time. For example, T-Mobile has ensured all current customers with data plans have access to unlimited smartphone data on their network for 2 months. We're all in this together. T-Mobile truly believes that. And while many T-Mobile stores are temporarily closed to help keep customers and employees healthy, they've still got you covered with any help you need. Just check out T-Mobile.com. You can see what stores are still open and how you can manage your account online. Stay safe out there. During congestion, customers using more than 50 gigs a month may notice reduced speeds prioritization, video typically at 480p, capable device required.